As Taoiseach, I want to see everyone reach their full potential. I want to help create an Ireland that drives innovation and creativity, an Ireland that is compassionate, tolerant and respectful.
On the things that really matter to workers and families, you have comprehensively failed, and no amount of bragging or bluster will disguise that fact.
So hello there. Well, now, yes, you normally put at the end because you're so tall, Paul. But
thank
anyway,
you.
We've lowered your chair. Put you in the middle.
Centre midfield.
There you go.
Just disguising
position.
Myself.
So hello, welcome to your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, Paul Cunningham, said Paul Cunningham, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lehan. And of course, the big story this week. How much of a surprise was it, that announcement from Eamon Ryan, the second coalition leader, to come out and surprise the public anyway?
It's just proof that when politicians want to keep secrets, they can. It was a surprise.
It's a good get out for us as well.
Exactly. Protecting ourselves and our reputation and our profession. So Eamon Ryan knew he was going to go, he said, for many months. He had been telling people, like Catherine Martin, that he was going to go. But when it was actually announced, it was a surprise. And for many people, they had already sort of baked in that Eamon Ryan would lead the party into the election, and then we'd see what would happen after that. But he's decided to go. And it was interesting that he gave quite an explanation as to why he was going to go. One was he'd been around for 13 years, which is quite some time. He picked up a party when they had no seats, when they had no senators, when they had no MEPs. I think they had three councillors. And he built the party up to 2020 when they had two MEPs and they had 12 TDs and a whole rake of councillors, I think around 50 or so, 49, 50. So that was sort of the high watermark. And he felt as they're heading into what's definitely going to be a difficult election, maybe someone new. But he also spoke about his personal life and talked about the responsibilities he had at home, a son with special needs, and he had to do that. That is something which many in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have also spoken of. They too were aware that he was likely to go, and they also believe that the reasons he's giving are also real. This isn't something that's been made up. And then the final issue was the question of how he and the party were being portrayed. And one of the things he did was he talked about the abuse that he was taking on social media, saying it was worse. He said that there seemed to be a coordinated political campaign anytime they made an announcement. But I think, to be fair, the Green Party would also have to ask themselves, why was it that they weren't able to articulate their policies so such criticism didn't resonate with so many people in rural Ireland?
There was there were more than a few eyebrows raised, weren't there, Sandra, at the Ryanair ads as well, on foot of his resignation. Probably not the most tasteful time to slag somebody off.
No, although maybe Michael O'Leary believes that old adage, there's no publicity like bad publicity. So he got some attention on the day. It was in poor taste. And Ryanair they've done that with previous ministers. You remember back to Mary O'Rourke, those ads of her in the bath.
Greens and Eamon Ryan do seem to be an O'Leary niggle, don't they? Or they have.
They
been,
do. Yeah. But any minister for transport or in the past, different portfolios that Ryanair would have fed into seems to be a problem for Ryanair. And they went for that. And it just was the wrong tone to strike, I think. And it also typified what he was talking about, the negativity, the constant barrage of criticism from all quarters. And he seems to have really personally become a kind of a lightning rod for some. We know the rural independents have singled him out again and again in the Dáil. They certainly believe it plays well for their constituency to constantly rail at the Greens and rail at Green policies. We saw an interesting debate on primetime this week between the Green Senator Roisin Garvey and Michael Healy-Ray from Kerry. And she pointed out to Michael Healy-Ray that some of the things he has hailed in press releases, like transport initiatives, are actually due to the Green Party. So I think there is an appreciation within the Green Party now that they need a reset, but they need to sell the benefits of their policies better, not just the imperative to do climate action and to maintain climate action. It's more the benefits. This is going to make your life better, your family's life better. They need to sell that message.
I was thinking, Micheál, and whether his detractors or his supporters, but they all have a lot to say about Eamon Ryan and his impact on Irish life, particularly this last stretch in government. Think of another politician who's made such a difference, given, you know, nature restoration stitched into law, climate legislation stitched into law, or big fines. whether Eamon Ryan is gone or not, Eamon Ryan's impact will be felt for years to come. And again, there are people who'll be saying good and bad about that. But someone who made a minister who made as big a difference.
Well, I suppose you have to, it's Lammas, isn't it? And that changing of the economic model, that's that fundamental shift. Eamon Ryan has achieved the same thing there. Was it going to happen anyway? Well, maybe it was, but definitely not as quickly as it has happened. And the ability, I suppose, as well, to get that into the programme for government, to get it over the line during the lifetime of a government that was dominated for a large part by COVID. And even bringing his party with him, because I mean, that day back in 2020, when that kind of consultation began within the Green Party, you could see that it was going to require an awful lot to get them over the line. Mm-hmm. And he did. And there was the inevitable split and fallout with a pairing off in the party Rorta, which haven't really gone very far at all. But to achieve all that was notable. And he was one of those rare things, even compared to Lammas or anyone else. He's an absolute conviction politician, but more than that, a conviction politician that was able to deliver in policy terms as well, not just speeches and not just from the comfort of saying things in the opposition benches. So for all those reasons, his achievements are notable.
Yeah. I think there's two things to say about that. Yeah. One is that he certainly learned from his first time as a minister in cabinet between 2007 and 2011. There was an awful lot of talk from Taoiseach Bertie Ahern about what they were going to do, but guess what? It didn't happen. So the second time round, he ensured that it was stitched into the programme for government and ensured that that was cross-party. It wasn't just that the Greens were going to do stuff, the government was going to do stuff. And I think ultimately, I agree with Micheál's analysis, because what he's done is effectively brought climate action and climate policy into mainstream. This isn't a green thing. They all have to face up to it. And in many cases, that's down to the power and convincing arguments that he's been able to marshal.
And some of it was very late. Like when you think back, it was the Saturday night just before the government was formed and the Sunday or got over the line, that things like the ban on further exploration was finally agreed. I mean, it did go right to the line in getting those final big significant measures in.
Wasn't just at home though, was it? Because like, it's interesting that one of his last acts before he announced his resignation was to go to Europe with Malcolm Noonan and to make sure that nature restoration line, which needed a critical vote from ministers in Europe, and it did, thanks to the Austrian, much to the ire of her government voting in favour of it. I wonder how significant it was to him getting nature restoration over the line on the European stage there.
I think that was really important to him, because that has stumbled for some time. It's nearly been there and then it wasn't. And the timing of his departure on Tuesday, I think it was important to him to see that over the line. And he has been operating at that higher international level, being a negotiator at COP for the EU. He's also been the chair of the International Energy Association. I think something else that has been impressive about him is his ability to bring people with him, people who are unsure. He is sort of a politician who works by persuasion. And it was really interesting to see in those coalition talks, so many of his party, the parliamentary party, did not want to go into government. They talked about a national unity government during COVID, but he persuaded them to get on board. There was that initial vote of the parliamentary party, and then there was the broader vote for the membership. And astonishingly, the membership vote passed by 76%. A lot of people would have been reluctant to go back into government, but he made those arguments and he persuaded all those people to come with him.
So, and then another change we found out then subsequently, Catherine Martin is not going to be continuing as deputy leader.
That surprise was as big as Eamon Ryan's little announcement. She was away, I believe, in Miami. The expectation had been that she was going to run because, just being very green, they just decided that they'd had a good election, decided they're going into government, and then they decided they're going to have a leadership campaign. So we actually have numbers, and it was only around 400 or 500 votes in a 2000 vote ballot that separated Catherine Martin from Eamon Ryan. But she's decided not to go. And she's also said that she's not going to comment on the election because she's a deputy leader and it wouldn't be appropriate to do so. So we haven't been able to interrogate her as to the reasons. Some of the speculation as to why she might not want to stand is that, you know, there's been a sense that Roderick O'Gorman is someone who could nearly do with the leadership. He's in a tough battle out in Dublin West. He is a person who has been with the party since he was born nearly, and that this could be something, because even the constituency he's in is going to have an additional seat, and that should improve his chances. But at the same time, the local elections, all the Green councillors were cleared out. So he is in a real political battle. Could it be that she made an estimation that maybe Roger couldn't do with it more than her?
Also, could it be, because there's a question, as Paul was saying, Micheál, about whether Roderick O'Gorman, the challenge he may have in holding his seat if it were a tough election for the Greens, also the fact that the other declared contender so far, Senator Pippa Hackett, even when the Green tide was running high, she couldn't get a Dáil seat. She
couldn't get a Dáil seat. And if you look at the local election results, where members of her family did run in Offaly, the entire Green first preference vote in Offaly was only around 800. That's the core base that the party are working off there now. So it's very hard to see any circumstances, really, realistically, in a new that back to a three-seater again, where Pippa Hackett could get elected. I mean, the Greens in any three-seater are going to be up against it, let alone a rural one where they've never held a seat. So for all those reasons, and the fact that she isn't a senior minister, she does sit at Cabinet. Her contributions at Cabinet, from what I understand, are fairly regular, apparently, and she is regarded at that level as being solid. So for those reasons, whoever gets it, there doesn't seem to be great worry across the government that it would lead to instability. Mm-hmm. But there's no doubt, too, like that central core of government, those Monday night meetings of the three governments, party leaders, the dynamics are changing all the time now.
Just on that, could there be, in terms of Catherine Martin not going for the leadership now, on the other hand, she's supposed to be the Green TD, isn't she, with the highest likelihood of holding on to her seat in a general election. So given that the Greens have to have a leadership contest after every general election, maybe she's
didn't going
to end
up
being leader anyway.
When asked today, she
statement, she said, at the moment, I'm not going to stand. So that did leave a very large open door that if it was the case that whoever wins doesn't win the party, you can't be a leader and not be in Leinster House if there are seats. So the Greens could be leader anyway.
Yeah. And the Greens are different too, because Catherine Martin talking today all but said that she is going to retain her position, her current role in Cabinet. Ostensibly because she needs to get that decision on the future funding of public service media over the line.
Oh, but that one, the one we've been waiting for such a long time.
Which should be due this day, 3 weeks at the latest. But she said that she has communicated this to the candidates and they have an understanding of the situation.
Lots of nice understandings, but the debate seems to be centering around, doesn't it, Sandra, urban versus rural, and Pippa Hackett's claim that because she is from the country, that because she is a farmer, she can connect the Greens with the base that they haven't touched. On the other hand, most of their votes come from cities where Roderick O'Gorman is based.
Yes, I think there's a recognition within the Green Party of the problem that they have and they need to tackle that. But is it too simplistic, as Roderick O'Gorman has said, to simply go for a rural representative as their leader? Will that simply fix the problem? He doesn't think so. But yes, it is very much part of Pippa Hackett's pitch that what makes her unique is she is from a farming background and she does live in a rural area. It is certainly the case, though, that the seats they are likely to come back with are... You mentioned Dublin Rathdown. Dublin Bay South would be a pretty safe seat as well, judging by the local election results. They topped the poll in two areas and they got another person in on the first count. So you'd have to say that's probably a pretty safe seat. There's a few others in Dublin.
Dunleary.
Dublin South Central. They may actually hold on there as well. Michael Pidgeon, that councillor,
topped the poll in his area. As well, there's an extra seat there, isn't there?
Yes, exactly. Yes. So if their base is going to be in Dublin, should they not consolidate there, rather than trying to tackle a sort of a message in rural areas? That is a debate that I think they are going to have over the next couple of weeks, because we do know Green Party representatives and members like to talk things out and they're going to have lots of hustings on this.
And we'll know all on July the 8th. There is a Dublin TD who got a big boost this week, Micheál, and Fianna Fáil.
Yes, Roderick O'Gorman's constituency colleague, of course, Jack Chambers, elevated to the high position of deputy leader, which has been vacant since Dara Cleary had to resign after what happened in Clifton all those years ago. So, like, this is kind of significant, isn't it? I mean, the party had been pushing it for a long time. It goes to a young Dublin TD, and Micheál Martin, when he was talking about it, it was Jack Chambers' organisational skills and the work he's going to do now in preparing things for the general election that seems to have swung it for him. It does suggest, too, that when, as expected next week, Michael McGrath gets the nod to become the European Commissioner, that whatever vacancy comes up in Cabinet then, that probably doesn't go to Jack Chambers. He'll be too busy now with this kind of election work. So someone else has to get a leg up there.
I heard that there's a group of Fianna Fáil politicians meeting in Leinster House late on Wednesday night, and then Micheál Martin walked up to the middle of them and said, well, you were looking for it. You have your deputy leader now.
Yeah. I like your Cork accent, Paul.
Dublin Cork. See, she's from Cork, so she's able to actually give this judgment.
Not bad, yeah.
Again on Micheál Martin showing it. strength that he has within the party at the moment, again, completely on his terms when he announced it. Not even the senior figures within the parliamentary party had any idea up to 45 minutes before it was announced.
So we have Fine Gael changing their leader. We have...
Sorry, I just don't understand what the point of that was. There was suddenly a circular sent out to the media that an announcement was going to be made. And the first thing we all thought
was,
he's going to walk just the same as
Leo
Varadkar
was. He was just playing with you all. He was just enjoying, teasing everybody.
Now what's going to be the commissioner? Is commissioner leadership? Yeah. And then it all turned out to be something a little bit of a...
Well, he said he enjoyed that. He said he enjoyed that. That bit of madness. <you know? laughs> Again, the person you would have said at this point, wouldn't you, 4 or 5 years ago, who was the most vulnerable of the party leaders, it would have been him, but he's now the strongest.
Yes, and all in his gift, it seems. Which is it's a remarkable turn up for the books, isn't it? Like the Greens, and he's still there and will be leading them, it looks like, into the next election.
I remember back in 2000, I was working on a tribunal of inquiry into the infection of people with haemophilia, with HIV and hepatitis C, and the health minister was Micheál Martin. He's still there, you know, 2024, it's amazing.
If Michael McGrath goes to the commission, what happens then to the budget? When Michael McGrath goes to the commission, what happens? Because the government keeps going that the budget is the holy grail, it's the most important thing since forever. It's clearly all the backbenchers hoping it's going to be the big ticket that gets them over the general election line. So what are they going to do without one of their key ministers?
Somebody else would be very happy to step up.
Throw in some names there, Sandra.
Well, there is already speculation. I've heard Dara O'Brien's name mentioned. I've heard Micheál Martin's name mentioned. That he would move from foreign affairs, although he does seem pretty happy there.
He never seemed to angle for finance over the years either, did he?
Yes, but it is a very senior portfolio. And at the moment, we know there's still a lot of money to give out. And that's a very happy position for any finance minister to be in. So I think that it'll be easy enough to make that. Yeah, Dara Cleary is another one. It'll be easy enough to make that appointment.
And
I think what
Dara
they do.
Maybe Micheál Martin might take the view that he owes him a little.
Yes, and he was the deputy leader. Of course, he had to lose and sacrifice that position as well.
He fell on his sword when
he had economic briefs.
He's been a junior at finance up to 2011. He was in the Department of Finance.
Yes, and he was opposition spokesperson for public expenditure as well, which is obviously related. So what could they do with the budget?
I still think
they'll bring it forward by 2 weeks. They did that a couple of years ago when there was all that pressure to do a cost of living budget sooner. They brought it forward by 2 weeks. I think that's what they do, bring it forward by a couple of weeks, and then you've got a bit more time to run into the election.
Heard it here first. Sandra Hurley's calling.
I think it's been said everywhere, to be honest.
Well, Simon Harris has been telling his parliamentary party, hasn't he? Push back hard against talk of an early election.
Yes. Well, there's never an election until there is an election, so...
What we don't have yet is a migration pact. What's going on there? I mean, we were supposed to be voting on this weeks ago, weren't we? That was the expectation. And then it was a huge topic of conversation right throughout the European election campaign. We know the positions of all the parties at this stage. And I thought the vote was going to happen this week, but now it's not.
But it's the same thing as the other big bill, which was going to be guillotined and sent through, the huge planning and development bill, the one that's Green Pages has been sitting at me in my office. I don't know how many pages there are, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And that has also been paused as well.
That was guillotine, wasn't it, at midnight or something last week?
Exactly, and then it was going to be sent to the Senate. And we're still waiting on, I think it was, Micheál Martin was suggesting a date for us. But once again, you're just getting a sense that maybe things aren't moving quite as quickly as they thought it were going to be. Same with the Migration Pact as well.
Yeah, the Migration Pact didn't make any sense because the opposition wanted more time to have it debated. And then at the last minute, that was granted last night, and it looked like government was just trying to avoid a vote on it. It was kind of strange carry-on that Hildegard Nocton walked into the chamber and said, we're going to continue the debate into next week, and no one knew who else wanted to talk. Bernard Dorkin did appear in the chamber after some time to say he would be speaking next week. Ultimately, that actual decision then was pushed to a vote and the government did have the numbers. So it did seem like they had the numbers last night.
But there is a clamour for a referendum on this. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a High Court challenge. A barrister has taken a challenge saying that this needs to be passed by referendum. So there is a suggestion also that the government may have to wait for that. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
And government would only have got notice of that yesterday. Wasn't that what the judge said, that he was going to issue notice at that point?
So watch that space and we'll await developments there. I can't leave without talking about the UK election campaign and the Tories. I mean, if
it's
ever there was an example of how not to run an election campaign. Today's latest, after the poll that predicted even Rishi Sunak would be losing his seat, the number of resignations in this betting scandal just goes on.
The Conservative Party's talked about a small number of people, not saying how many small is small, could be 100, who knows, that were are now under question in relation to whether or not they were trying to use insider information and bet on the date of the election. And this is now occupying all of the papers. There's some fantastic stuff on social media with pictures of politicians being used and cartoons and all sorts of things. But it just is emblematic of the chaotic nature of the Conservative Party's campaign. Some are saying like it's difficult to consider how worse you could plan a campaign. And it started off on that very day when Rishi Sunak walked out of number 10 to announce that he was having an election, and it absolutely lashed rain on him. And it just had the bang off it that they were going down the tubes. Now, the risk with something like that is that British Labour Party voters may say, oh, well, it's already been decided, we're going to stay at home. Yeah. So I think that from, if you're looking at the leader of the opposition, what he has to do, Keir Starmer, is to ensure that the lid is kept on the campaign and they continue to convince people to come out, because, you know, anything can happen in an election campaign.
The most effective campaigning so far over there has been Ed Davey, actually. And again, it's kind of a lesson for politicians, is it, in 21st century communication. He's been, you know, slagging himself. He's been very open about his own family and his situation with his child with disability, and how he has to make jokes and be jokey, because that's part of how he's learned to communicate. It is very direct in 21st century, isn't it? It'd be interesting to see how many people try to copy that style. The point is, you have to be genuine, though, don't you?
Yes, and people react to personalities and they vote for people that they like. There's a big likability factor and it goes beyond any ability with policy and getting things done. He's coming across as likable at the moment. As you mentioned, he's opening up about his family. That appeals to people. And it's something that some politicians have in spades, but others you might meet around here don't. And it is something
Boris
quite unique.
Boris Johnson had it in spades. Likability. He
well,
was
people
the guy you'd like
adored
to have a chat
him
with.
At one stage. Absolutely adored him. And look where it's all ended up.
Actually, speaking of Boris Johnson, there's an election going on at the moment that we're not talking about so much, but is likely to have a much bigger impact on all of us. And that's what's happening in France, which is kind of having its Frexit moment in a way, nearly, isn't it?
I mean, this was when the president wasn't happy with the European results and felt that the party of Marine Le Pen had made such gains because it is far right that that needed to be challenged. So what he decided to do was trigger an election, as is his powers under the presidential system. Most of the power lies with the president rather than with the parliament. And so he decided to effectively put it up to French people and say, is this who you want? Ms. Le Pen has been delighted with this because they feel that this is a coming moment, not just in France, but across wider Europe. Maybe the right and far right didn't secure as much support as people might have anticipated. But certainly when it comes to France, she believes she's got Emmanuel Macron's mark. And so we're careering towards that just at the time the eyes of the world are on the country anyway, because there's the Olympics going on there as well. It's going to be mental.
And on that note, we'll wrap it up for today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, however you paid attention to us. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Take care.